Hello, and welcome to Save Game Chronicles, a retro video game podcast with two friends of over 20 years who play a retro video game for 2 weeks, and then we talk about it. I'm your host, John, and...
I'm Justin, soon to be the favorite.
I think you already are. So I actually got asked a question earlier this week on what my favorite video game system is. What's your favorite video game system?
Probably the PS2, because I got one when I was 10, and that's... what a lot of my formative years were played on. A lot of my favorite games. What about yours?
Yeah, honestly, I'm feeling the same. I like PlayStation 1, but I like PlayStation 2 a lot better. I think it's the best-selling home video game console.
I know it's definitely the peak of the PlayStation line. That was their best console by far.
Yeah, and I remember it went into the following generation of video games.
Kind of like now.
Yeah, you're right. What was the last game that you played on the PS2?
Wait. I know what game I was playing a lot before I got the next generation. Like, I think the next console I got was the 360. But before I got that, I was playing a lot of Dragon Ball Z games, like Budokai 3 specifically.
Yeah, I was playing SmackDown vs. Raw 2000 and one of them. I don't remember which.
You used to have 2008 because I borrowed it.
I think it was WWE SmackDown vs. Raw 2008. And then that game also came out on the Xbox 360, which was another game system that we played. And, well, it happens to be the same game system that this episode's game is played on, which is Lost Odyssey. In a realm of classic RPGs, few titles invoke the sense of an epic adventure and emotional depth quite like Lost Odyssey. Developed by Mistwalker and released exclusively for the 360 in 2008, this masterpiece takes players on a captivating journey through a world of immortals, lost memories, and profound existential themes. During my initial research of the game, I read that its story is often comparable to Final Fantasy X, which is one of my favorite games of all time. Reading that made me very excited to try this game out. Justin, you picked this game for us. What were your reasonings?
Just because I know, especially when it came out and I played it, I was constantly trying to get you to play it, and you never did, so I thought this would be a good excuse to thrust you into that.
Did you get it when it first came out?
No, I got it the next year, because it didn't sell very well here, so it dropped in price pretty quick. So it was a game I picked off the shelf for $20.
So my exposure to this game would have been, sometime around 2010 then. I feel like I did borrow it at one point, and I remember starting the game. I got probably to the first save point. Between high school and getting grounded and playing Call of Duty online, I just never picked it up again. Like many other JRPGs, this is a very story heavy, and combined with the random battles that do tend to drag on, this game can easily be over 50 hours because it is a 4-disc game for the 360. Needless to say, I was unable to finish it. I got to just before disc 3, so I'm thinking I was probably about a little over halfway. I know you've beaten it a couple times. How far did you get this time?
This time I got to disc 2, I didn't finish it, just because I had beaten it so many other times and it's still fresh in my head, and I had other things I was playing. As far as how far you got into it, it depends. If you're only doing the main story, then I'd say you're a little less than half. But yeah, you're about there, about halfway.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the, especially if you've played another Mistwalker game like Blue Dragon or anything like that. There's so much side stuff, especially by the time you get to disc 3 or 4 in this game, that takes so many hours to fill out. Optional equipment for your party members, the secret bosses, all that. Main story-wise, yeah, you're probably about halfway through, and that's about the point I hit, too.
Okay. This game was an exclusive 360 game.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe during that time, it was the PS3, which had a lot of the RPGs, a lot of the JRPGs.
Like, starting with the original Xbox and into the 360, that's what most people knew it for, was like Halo, Gears of War. And I might be wrong. When the original Xbox came out, it was marketed as a more adult-centered console, whereas the PlayStation 2 is like family-friendly with a DVD player included and all that. As far as JRPGs, I think the PS3 and 360 were actually even in the amount they had, or close to it. It's just JRPGs weren't as popular then as they are now.
Yeah.
If a game like Lost Odyssey released now, it would not drop to $20 within a year like it did back then.
This game probably did fly a little bit under the radar for a lot of people. I know that it has a huge cult following, and after I looked it up online, there's a lot of people who actually enjoy this game.
That's why I wanted you to drink the Kool-Aid, man.
Outside of just the one time you were trying to get me to play it when we were kids, I never even had heard of anyone else talking about this game. Lost Odyssey offers a traditional turn-based RPG experience with a twist. Players assume the role of Kaim Argonar, an immortal warrior haunted by forgotten memories. The gameplay is reminiscent of classic RPGs, like I talked about earlier, Final Fantasy, that we played on the first episode, actually, in which you have a front row and a back row. In this game, the back row has reduced damage from enemies, while the front row acts as their shields. In traditional RPGs, your back row, if they have them, those are usually your magic wielders or your support characters, whereas your front lines are mainly your attackers, your fighters, your warriors. That's how this game seemed to have presented itself. At least that's how I played it. My party mainly consisted of, and I don't think names are a spoiler. So my front row consisted of Kaim and Seth, who both are more offensive. They also happen to be immortals. My back row had three support magic type users, Ming, Jensen, and Cook. Cook, she was my support character. My heavy hitter would have been Jensen for his magic abilities. And his backup was, I would say, Ming, who was also an immortal. Before I go forward, I'm just curious, what was your party like?
My party, every time I played the game, ended up the same. It's always Kaim and Seth in the front. It's like the vanguard. And then my back row was always Sarah and Ming. And then in the middle, I would always switch between Sed and Jansen. It's always the same every time I play. Jansen is a really good spellcaster. Maybe, I don't remember, he might turn out to be like the best one in the game. And Sed is a really good support character. Plus, it's the way the skills work in the game, where mortal characters like Jansen and Sed learn skills as they level up. Immortal characters don't learn skills by level up. They have to skill link with a mortal character, and they both have to be in the fight. So I'd want to learn certain skills off of a party member, so I'd have to rotate them into my party for a few fights until they learn that skill, and then I could swap them back out.
And I noticed that too with me when I unlocked Sarah and I started to get more people in the party. I noticed I had to do that too. I would switch out Mac with Jensen in order to get some of Mac's support skills and give them to Ming.
Because it's Mac is the first one you get to his force, something like that.
Yeah.
And it's right before you get to a point in the game where most of the enemies are weak to that.
Another thing I noticed too is your magic wielders, they usually tended to have lower HP.
By a lot.
Definitely seemed like the game was designed to have you put them in the back row to get that protection.
They also had the guardian engaged too. You have your two front row characters, or three, however many you put in your front row. And then you have the guardian core gauge at the top of the screen, which is the combined total of your front row character's HP. And as your front row characters get hit, it depletes. Restoring their HP won't restore the guardian gauge. And the lower the guardian gauge gets, the more damage your back row is opened up to. If your guardian gauge is completely depleted, it's at zero. Even if you have a front row, your back row is vulnerable to the same amount of damage as your front row.
And so
certain skills that can bring it back up.
So just by healing your characters doesn't actually bring it up, though.
The enemies have the same gauge.
On the whole concept of the HP going down, one thing I thought that was cool is when your characters who are immortal, when they die, they don't actually die. They just pass out for two or three turns.
Yeah. When I first played the game, I complained about it because a teenager playing a game that I thought was a little difficult. They're supposed to be immortal. Why am I getting game over? Not knowing what ludonarrative dissonance was. So if an immortal character gets downed in combat, if all of your characters get downed, you'll still get a game over. But if you pass a few turns, immortal characters will revive themselves. They come back with really little HP, don't they?
Yeah, they come back with maybe a quarter of their HP.
They just stand back up and they look up and they're like, I ain't hear no bell.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure, yeah, it was like every two or three turns. So if the party gets hit by like a big attack and I just wasn't expecting it, or if I just happened to walk in thinking that I was going to be good enough for this basic fight, and then they knock all my party members out at once and maybe two people are kept alive, Instead of me wasting items on bringing back the Immortals, I brought my other people back up to health to keep them alive long enough for the Immortals to wake back up. And then that's how I would rebuild my parties if I did get into a tough situation.
Yeah, like Kaim can survive a meteor getting dropped on him at the start of the game. But a little Kel'Thalan-looking leaf dude pokes him with a sharp stick and he gets knocked down for 3 turns. It's annoying. I forgot how difficult some of the early boss encounters are.
The first one was real hard.
I forget its name, but are you talking about that like griffin looking thing up on a mountain peak?
Yeah.
There's that one and the one right after him, the Bogmore, which actually is pretty easy if you prepare for him. But the Burb one, it almost feels like you got to get lucky.
It's RNG, and he has like a random...
He's weak to fire, but not by much.
I would lose every time. Because at this point, you pretty much had to boost Jensen and just have him just keep spamming fire on it. And then for whatever reason, that triggers the boss to not use his like...
You have to stay aggressive.
Yeah.
If somebody gets downed or low on HP, do not heal. Keep attacking.
Yeah.
Which is goes against everything in that you're used to doing in a JRPG.
Maybe I got that far as a kid and I got to that part and I was like, this game's just going to be too hard. I don't know. I don't know what the deal was. But yeah, after that boss, it mellows out into a sense of where you would expect your skills to be.
It's part of what interested me in the game when I first played it. Because if you like prepare for some of these bosses, it makes you feel smart. Like the next boss, the Bogmore, has this move that hits your whole party for huge damage and it paralyzes all of them.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I got stuck in that boss the first time I played the game. I was like, this is impossible. If you go back and explore the area right before getting that boss, you get an accessory that makes you immune to paralysis. And Immortals, like linking with mortal characters to earn skills, they can learn skills off of the accessories they have equipped too. So now every time I play the game, I'll get that accessory, put it on Kaim, do some battles until he learns the ability, give him the ability, switch the accessory to Seth, do the thing over again, then give it to Jansen, go into the fight, and all my characters are immune to paralysis, and the fight is just, it's a cakewalk after that.
Yeah, I had something similar. I did the exact same thing, just not knowing I did it. They already had the ability equipped to them, so the boss you're talking about didn't even faze me, so it's kind of funny.
It's funny, too, because like when I said we were going to be playing the game, that's one of the bosses I had in mind. I was like, he's going to be texting me. Like, how do you beat this thing?
Nope, it was just, for me, it was legitimately that very first griffin-looking boss. And then after that, the bosses, I won't say that they're easy. They do require a little bit of skill, or at least prepping and making sure you don't go into there with low health or low magic or anything like that. Which brings me to my next point of the encounter rate. Before I played this game, one of the things that people criticize it for was a high encounter rate. I don't know how you feel about that, but I didn't think the encounter rate was high, but I did think that the battles drug on a little bit too long, like longer than I would expect. If all my characters are around the right level that they should be for the area that I'm fighting the enemies at, I would imagine turns should take maybe 1 or 2 turns to just fight them off. But in some of these battles, they would go on for 3 or 4 turns for me. And that's just because, I guess it's the lack of abilities where I'm at. Maybe it's just me, but my heavy hitters, they can only attack one enemy at a time. But then I'm up against, 6 different enemies overall. And my back row, up until a certain point in the game where I could get that buffer where I actually reduced the spellcasting time, it would take 2 turns for my spells to go off that actually target the entire group. So it would take me 2, 3, 4 turns to actually complete a battle. And then I used a lot of magic trying to do it. Now I'm continuing my game. And boom, hit again. I got to go through this whole thing again. So the encounter rate wasn't high, but the battle time lasted a lot longer than I wanted it to.
I will say that's because of the point you're at in the game. Later on, everyone gets skills that make them do a crap load more damage. Seth and Kaim eventually get double and triple slash, so they attack 2 or 3 times in a turn. Your spellcasters will get double cast, so they cast twice in one turn. And as far as the encounter rate, I won't say it's high, but there are parts where it's just weird. Sometimes you can go through part of a level and get 1 or 2 encounters. And in some dungeons in the game, I remember the final dungeon being one. So every step and a half, you'll literally stop halfway into your second step, you're in another fight. And it gets pretty crazy. But as long as the fights take, that does get better as the game goes on and you get more abilities.
That's good to know, even though I'm halfway through the game.
It's a long game.
I don't like using the word linear, but it did seem a little bit linear. If you're in a dungeon, you walk in one direction, let's say north, you just walk all the way
It's got a
north.
lot of branching paths.
It does have a lot of branching paths, but like a lot of that just leads you, and could be wrong, but a lot of the time it does seem like it just, those either lead you in a circle or they just lead you to an item and you have to backtrack.
Well, a lot of it, there's certain areas where there's things you can do there that you can't do your first time through. Bringing it to a game you like, Final Fantasy X, the first time you go through Thunder Plains, there's not really much to do there. But you come back later and you can dodge the lightning for an ultimate weapon, something that makes the ultimate weapon better. And then there's the Kachuar statues. There's a lot of areas like that in Lost Odyssey. Pretty much, from what I remember, almost every area in the game.
Which doesn't, those areas don't, yeah, and that's another thing is too, is like the areas seem to be just locked off based on like where you're at in the story. I assume in most RPGs there is an option that's going to let you come back.
Well, it's like a lot of JRPGs where toward the end of the game, you can pretty much go anywhere that you've been because you get a certain mode of transportation or something like that.
Yeah, and this one it seems to be a boat, or at least that's where I got. But
That's
again,
always the pattern, man.
yeah.
Shallow water, sea, boat, and then airship. That's the general thing in JRPGs.
And that's a thing too. I noticed that there is no real like overworld. It's just a menu.
The world map is just a list of locations you choose from. And then it plays that animation of your characters walking over the world map.
So there is no real point of it having that boat then, because all it does is just let you just move from one section of the game to.
Oh, I won't. There's at least one part I can think of where it is. There's a reason for the boat. I won't spoil too much of it, but you have to quickly sail between these towns and defend them from something that's happening. Another point I got stuck on as a kid.
On that same note of traversing around and going through dungeon puzzles, I thought they were fun. The one thing that's one of them that stood out to me the most is, without spoiling it, I'll just call it the haunted house. I think you can pick
Oh, the
up.
mansion.
Yeah, like the haunted mansion.
Yeah.
So yeah, the haunted mansion's puzzle was it was interesting. You essentially had to go through modern time mansion, and it was old and decrepit. To traverse through the puzzle, you had to go through these mirrors, which took you back in time. When you're back in time, that will allow you to interact with different objects that will then change the present. So when you go back through the mirrors again, you'll have access to some area that you didn't have access before due to this time hopping magic type situation. I thought that was fun. You would go to the past, it would show you this picture, and then you go to the future and you would take these items and be able to plug them in to where they're supposed to go for this picture.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and then that opens up this gate, which lets you then go through, like progress through that dungeon slash mansion and do your typical JRPG stuff where you get to a save point, save, and then fight the boss of that area.
I remember one of the, my second or third time playing the game, the puzzles were a cool idea, most of them. I wouldn't say they were fun. I think my second or third playthrough, I went through and I was trying to get all the things I missed in my first playthrough, secret weapons and areas of the game, things like that. And a lot of the puzzles you have to do, Tolton, to get, I think it's his sword, his ultimate sword. You have to do this stupid puzzle. I can't remember what the puzzle was, but I remember I followed a guide the whole time just because I didn't have the patience for it. And even then, I was getting stuck. But when it comes to puzzles, I'm an idiot anyway. That's all I got to say about that.
One thing I will say before we move on about the puzzles. Having to deal with the puzzles themselves and this and that encounter rate was annoying in the sense that now I'm draining all my magic, now I'm draining all my HP, now I'm draining all my items. Now I finally get to the boss, my save point. The save point doesn't heal you.
Magic's not easy to recover.
It's not. And then now I'm backtracking because I have to go all the way back to the previous town in order to prepare for that boss and hope I don't die on my way back.
So my strategy was always like, even if it makes the encounters take longer, do not use magic in the random encounters. Just because it's easier to heal your HP than your MP. You take the hits, the fights take longer because you can't cast. But by the time you get to the end, you restore your HP and your MP is already there. That's what I used to do.
That's a good word of advice. It's a good word of advice. If you're not playing this game on a deadline of 2 weeks,
Definitely.
then that works.
Back in the day, I knocked this game out in 5 days. Now it's, I played this before, let me do something else.
On to the graphics and sound part of the show. Visually, Lost Odyssey is a stunning achievement for its time. The game's lush environments, detailed character models, and cinematic cutscenes showcase the technical powers of the 360. The models are really detailed, and the movement captures the character's personalities well. For the more reserved characters, they move exactly how you expect a shy person to move, at least in the cutscenes. For example, Sarah seems to be a little bit more timid. I don't know her too well, but from what I did see, she does seem to be a little bit more timid. Same with Ming. They do seem to be more shy and reserved, so their character actions actually are mimic that.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least that's what how I noticed it. Kaim, he's more of your strong, silent protagonist. And
the stoic edgelord.
And he does exactly that. He's always serious. And then when it's time for a fight, he's always just mimics that I'm ready to fight stance. I don't know. I noticed that. And I thought it was pretty cool looking at some of their animations. Even in the fights, you can see it. Although, now think about it. I feel like Ming, maybe she's not the shy type. Would you consider her like a shy type?
At first, it's just more so like she doesn't know who she can trust. All the characters by the end are a lot different than when you first meet them, like any game or movie or whatever.
So they just develop as the story goes. Yeah. Like the personalities develop as the story goes.
And keep in mind, they all have amnesia too. All the immortals do to some extent. So as the game goes, they get more of their memories back and they develop more as characters. But I will say, like you were talking about the animations, they are really good in this game. Especially in a fight, like usually in a JRPG, you're choosing attack, defend, item, whatever. Your characters just stand there. And at most, you get like an animation, their body's moving slightly because they're breathing. In this game, they're actually doing something. Jansen will check his equipment, spin his staff, whatever. And the sound effects are really good too. I remember when I first was interested in this game before I bought it, I watched a YouTube video of a boss fight. I saw this 15 years ago. And one of the, when YouTube still had top comment said, I've never seen a JRPG where the characters are just standing around picking their butts. And it made me laugh, and I like the animations and the way the combat looks, so that's when I bought the game. But yeah, it's unique in a really good way.
No, and I agree. The enemies are also the same way. They're great details. They fit the environment that you would expect them to be in. Mm-hmm. Taking it back to that haunted mansion, it's a lot of undead. It's a lot of ghost types. Their designs are they're phantom-like. Or if you're at the bog? Is that what it was? Not the bog. The Magic Forest had a lot of magical creatures, pixies. Because it is a magic forest, they're infused with a lot of like magical creatures.
Yeah. And then you got the classic stuff from RPGs where if you're in a beach area, you got the fish that are floating in midair as if they're swimming. But that's normal. Par for the course.
And I don't think we mentioned it earlier, but this game does take place in a world of what seems like magic and steampunk.
It's... The state of the world in the game is a magic industrial revolution.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Magic and steampunk.
It had just discovered all these uses for magic when before it was like, oh, there's this weird energy crap in the air. We don't know what to use it for.
Mm.
And they had just discovered how to use it for everyday life, like fuel or magical abilities and whatever. So they were already in their industrial revolution when they made the discovery, and it's just mixed and incorporated into each other. But I mean, you can see it in the game, even in the first city that you go to, Ura. I could see why you describe it as steampunk, because it's just all metal everywhere in the city. And the game, even with the sound effects, you can hear hissing steam. You'll see these pipes or power lines all over the city with magic running through them and steam shooting out of the loose corners.
Yeah.
So yeah, I could see the steampunk thing. All right, so the soundtrack of the game was done by Nobuo Uematsu, who some would say is the John Williams of the video game world. What did you think of the soundtrack, John?
I think it enhances the game by better immersing you into the atmosphere of the game. It complements the game's narrative and its emotional moments. For those who do not know, this is the same person who did the music for the Final Fantasy games and many other Square games. His music conveys the emotion of the environment to make you feel what's really going on. The music is composed beautifully, and if I have to make one critique, not against him as the composer, but going back to the battles, the repetitiveness of the battle theme really does become annoying, so it loses that touch over time.
There's not a lot of battle tracks.
they don't change the battle tracks often enough to where you don't get bored. And while it certainly sounds amazing when you first hear it, after hearing it about 100 times.
I think I agree with you there. The battle music, you hear it so many times, it's okay, it's grating. But the overall music, it's like, it feels classic.
It does, it fits. And also, when I looked this up, I noticed that he pretty much did almost all of the Final Fantasy soundtracks. And if he didn't do them exclusively, he worked on them with other people. For example, bringing it back to Final Fantasy X, one of these days we're going to have to play this game. He didn't do the music for Final Fantasy X.
He was in consultation.
Yeah, in some capacity. And I was wondering why it gave me that Final Fantasy feel. At first, I was like, man, they're definitely trying to copy over Final Fantasy. And not knowing the composer did Final Fantasy. So I thought that was pretty
I feel like there are a lot of people who would play any JRPG and be like, oh, this is a Final Fantasy ripoff. Forgetting the fact that they're fantasy games, all of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's true. What about voice acting?
Jensen's line delivery is freaking perfect.
It is, yes. I don't know who he is.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you any of the names from what I remember off the top of my head right now. But voice acting ranges from passable to excellent. And Jensen falls under excellent.
Yeah.
The perfect line delivery, which is the most important part of a comic relief character. And it's so good.
We're going to move on to story and characters. At the heart of Lost Odyssey lies its compelling story and richly developed characters. As Kaim embarks on a quest to recover his lost memories, players are treated to a narrative filled with twists, turns, and leaves the player internalizing how they view the world and what it means to live your life. The diverse cast of characters, each with their own motivations and backstories, adds depth to the game's world and keeps players invested in the journey. I believe there are 5 immortals total in the game. 4 are playable, while the rest of your party members are regular mortals. There's 2 more characters that I don't have any idea who they are, what they do, or anything about them.
So the characters you've got, the immortals are Kaim, Seth, Ming, and Sarah. And then the mortal characters you get are Cook and Mac, who are Kaim's grandkids, King Tolton from Ura, and you get Sed, who is Seth's son. And those are the main playable characters of the game. And it's funny that the characters are immortal, because Kaim's grandkids join the party when Kaim looks like he's 20 or 30 years old.
He's actually younger than his daughter.
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of, maybe that's spoiling.
Spoiler, but it don't matter. And Sed, Seth's son, when he joins, he is an old wrinkly man. And she, again, looks like a 20 or 30 year old. And he's another kind of comic relief character. Him and Jensen do not get along. So it's pretty funny.
As you just mentioned, the game does kind of branch out. I had no idea that the other 2 party members are related to your parties. Like the story does get bigger, and that's what I had assumed in general JRPG fashion. The world starts small, and as you play throughout the game, it opens up and the world just becomes massive.
That's pretty much why the story is so popular to people that do love the game, is because it starts off small and it filters a lot of people. Like, they lose interest quick. But if you stick with it, especially the second half of the game, you get really invested in these characters. And it is a pretty emotional story, especially just Kaim's backstory in general.
That's another thing I saw that people criticize this game over is, yeah, it does have a very slow start, like a very slow start.
Mm-hmm.
But that's mainly just because, or at least in my opinion, that's because you're put into Kaim's shoes where
he had no idea.
You don't know what's going on. Exactly.
Like the very beginning of the game, first thing that happens, meteor falls on the battlefield. Everyone gets killed except for Kaim. He just stands up, dusts himself off. Like, that was weird. And he starts walking back to town.
So that can be a little hard for someone who's playing the game for the first time to want to invest in, because what's going on? But at the same time, if you stick to it, starts to open up, you start to learn more about what's going on. And then the game does begin to get interesting, especially like I had mentioned, a lot of those twists. A little bit of a spoiler here. We've already mentioned it already. He has grandkids that he doesn't know about. And he's also over, what, he's 1,000 years old or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But how'd those grandkids come to be? What happened? His past starts to merge with the present, and it just becomes a more interesting story, especially the emotion behind it. Like, it carries some very strong philosophical themes behind it. One of the biggest themes I noticed, it's basically appreciating life for what it is. But on the flip side, because Kaim's immortal, he appreciates life, but it works different for him. Like,
he distances himself because he's tired of outliving everybody. At the beginning of the game, especially the beginning of the game, Kaim is just like this protagonist JRPG dude who says what comes off as edgy crap, where it's like, Jansen will ask him, don't you want your memories back? And Kaim says no, because he says all he can remember is that it was painful. And what he's referencing is how many people he's watched die over the past millennium or whatever. And when he does find his grandkids, he starts wanting to remember things from his past.
To help you discover parts of his past, there is a feature of the game called 1,000 Years of Dreams. Essentially what that is, they are visions that Kaim has randomly of his past. A lot of these times it's like little small things that he just notices. Like, he walks to the park and he sees some kids playing, then that triggers a memory in him and he starts remembering it. Or if he goes to sleep, he'll have these dreams of his past. What these 1,000 Years of Dreams is, they're the little short stories. The very first one is about him befriending this little girl whose time is almost up. She's only lived maybe, I don't know, maybe like six or eight years, something like that.
She's a kid, I remember.
She's really young. And
she can't travel, but she's always wanted to.
Yeah.
So Kaim would come and tell her stories about him traveling around the world. And that's basically what the first one is about.
Yeah. And so these short stories, they just add a layer of emotional depth to the experience, because his past is hazy to him. As he starts to remember these things, it draws out the fact that he actually does have feelings. He has emotions, and it helps further build him as a character. Before we move on with that, I wanted to ask, what's your opinion on those stories? Did you like them?
I liked that they're in the game. The first time I played the game, I read them all. And let me tell you, when we say short stories, it can take you up to 30 minutes to an hour to read through some of them. I like that they're in the game and they are well written.
Well written. They're amazing.
Yeah. But on all of my playthroughs after my first one, I never really read them again. I always skipped them. But yeah, I think they're great.
Yeah. My opinion is they had a great touch to the game. Yeah, it does take away from your time. Because, yeah, they do take a long time, especially that first one. I was reading it and I was invested. Like, I was actually starting to feel something for what was going on in the story. Mm. And then I'm like, okay, it's getting to the end. And then I'm like ready to be sad. And then it just keeps going. And
to give people an idea of the length, just because this other game I'm about to reference is more popular now than when it came out. If you've ever played Nier or Nier Replicant, there's a part in the game where you're in this like forest village, and it's going to sound weird, but if you play the game, you know what I'm talking about. You talk to this tree, and the tree has this curse on it that pulls you into text, and you have to choose the right choices throughout the text story that the game is giving you, and it just seems to go on forever. Every short story in 1,000 Years of Memories and Lost Odyssey is longer than that, and there's a lot of them. So that'll give you an idea of the length of them, but they are very well written. And if you want to learn more about the characters, especially Kaim in Lost Odyssey, they're worth reading and putting your time into.
Yeah, and then I wanted to talk about it a little bit earlier too, but like the music definitely adds to that, adds to the feeling. So the music, the sound effects, and there's one where it helps set the scene by adding that background music and that background noise. For example, there's one where Kaim's in a bar with someone, and in the background, they have noise of just people just talking in the background, as if you're actually at a restaurant, yeah, or a bar or something. I'm actually starting to feel a little bit more immersed as I'm reading the story. And then sad things happen. The music changes or gets quiet because everyone, for that example, in that story, something happens and everybody just stops talking. And it's a real tense moment. So now it's just complete silence. It helps keep you immersed in the story.
Talking about the 1,000 Years of Dreams and the short stories, there's an achievement for getting all of them or watching all of them. Because again, this is a 360 game. I played the game multiple times. I'd never got that achievement. So I'm not even sure how many there are.
You've beaten this game multiple times. You'll be able to explain this better. From what I looked up online is, while Lost Odyssey may not offer extensive replay value in itself, not having branching paths or multiple endings like a lot of these newer games do, Like, it's a very emotional game that's worth revisiting, especially for the story. Again, I haven't gotten to the end. I don't know how many more twists there are, how much more that there is to be uncovered. But the parts that I've played and read so far, it is a very emotional game. For a completionist who wants to go back and unlock everything, there's plenty for them to do. There's a lot of side quests. You mentioned that there's ultimate weapons. There is the 1,000 years dream sequences that you can unlock. There is, I'm assuming there's a pretty large amount of side stuff that you can do.
The biggest thing I can think of is I don't want to call them like side quests because they're not that extensive. There's the Colosseum, which you have to do certain things to unlock different fights. And at the end, you get the game's super boss, which is called the Immortal, or the Immortal One, I think he's called. He's tough. But yeah, there's a lot of side content in the game.
And then overall, the story, how do you feel about... Like, how did you feel going into this again?
I've beaten this game multiple times, but the last time I beat it was probably over 10 years ago. So especially with that time gap, even though I played it multiple times, I'll get to certain parts in the story where it's like, I got to turn the game off. It's getting late. I got to go to sleep. But I really want to see what happens. Even though I've seen it before, I'm into it again. Like, it drew me back in.
Just like with the other three games, we always have to give our rating on if we're going to save this game, lock it in our memory card, or if we're going to shelve it and forget about it. And we'll start with you. What's your idea on Lost Odyssey?
It's a save, obviously. It's a classic for me. I kind of wish Mistwalker and Microsoft had done more games together. They did this and they did Blue Dragon. I'm either not aware of any other games they did together, or I'm drawing a blank on them right now, but I think the game is a classic. It's like a must play for JRPG fans, especially.
Again, in order for the episode to be a say, we both have to agree. And so for me, I'm going to open up by saying that the pacing, it can be slow at times, especially during the early stages in the game. Story doesn't really pick up until you're already at least 6 hours in. Some people find that the random encounter rate is high. Me personally, I do think that the battles take a lot longer. Again, maybe that changes throughout the game, but from where I'm at, it would take sometimes 5 to 10 minutes just for one random encounter. What I understand, there is limited replay value. However, Lost Odyssey does have a compelling story with some well-developed characters. Kaim's grandkids, their emotional intelligence grows as the game goes on. Like how kids develop into adults, you can see that change between them. You can see it with the immortals gaining their memories back, that they are also starting to grow as characters of their past, but still growing nonetheless.
You'll even get to see Kaim smile at some points.
Yeah, and I like that. The music's amazing. It's great. The visuals are amazing.
I still think the visuals even hold up today, because back in the day, they definitely did, because this was like an early to mid-gen 360 game, so I had the classic problems where colors looked washed out and gray. Some textures were muddy.
Yeah.
But that's overall, just for its era. But today it still holds up, I think.
Yeah. Like I definitely didn't feel like I was playing an older game. It played pretty smooth. The emotional depth, the tone, it definitely leads to some very thought provoking themes, especially considering a lot of people say that they want to live forever, but what does that really mean? Overall, I'm going to give it a save. Yeah, this game, it's great, and I do wish that I would have played it when we were younger, when you asked me to play it, because...
I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Like, I recommend things.
Yeah, like, it's a great game. As a kid, I would have had a lot more time to play, and then instead of being in those Call of Duty lobbies losing anyway, because I suck, it would have been good to spend that playing this game, because the time is definitely worth investing in. As an adult, I don't have as much time, so it's hard for me to be able to sit down and play these longer games. But this is definitely a game that I'm going to continue playing moving forward. So, yeah, you saved it. I saved it. We're putting it in our massive, hopefully one day, memory card. And
this is only the second game we've disagreed on the last two.
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, right now, we're 2-2. Ironically, two of those are RPGs that we both agree on, and the other two were platformer types. So.
That's why you guys got to keep listening. Bring more people in. Friends of 20 years. It could be friends only for those 20 years by the end of all it.
Lost Odyssey is a save for both of us. It's getting put in our memory card. We're moving on. And with that, we are going to go to the next game that we're going to be playing for 2 weeks. And that's my choice this time. So that'll come out the first week of May. Oh, my birthday month. I get to pick a game for my birthday month. The game that we're going to be playing for the next 2 weeks is another platformer video game. It's in a series. It's the first of three. It was developed by Crystal Dynamics, and it details the adventures of a anthropomorphic gecko named Gex. The name of the game is just called Gex. First released in April of 1995 for the 3DO and Game Boy Color, and later ported to the PlayStation and Nintendo 64. We're playing Gex.
We now have our own website, so you can find us at savegamechronicles.com. You can send us emails, suggestions, and feedback at contact@savegamechronicles.com. You can listen to our podcast on the website itself, or we're also on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music. Yeah, we're everywhere, man.
We are on iTunes as well. But yeah, seriously, email us, talk to us. We would really appreciate hearing from you guys. Ultimately, again, we're just trying to make this into a community, build this, grow this podcast. If you got any games you want us to play, let us know. In the future, we would love to be able to play these games with you guys. Yeah, that's all I got to say about that. So again, this has been Save Game Chronicles with your hosts, John
and Justin. Again, the favorite one, don't tell John.
And cue the outro. I want to get this right. Nobuo.
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 Nobuo.